In turning from Evagrius to Cassian on the question of anger, we also turn rather significantly into a very different milieu, and I think we'll be surprised to see that that Cassian is considerably less flexible and some would say less nuanced in his approach to the question of anger. The use of indignation, the sense that there is a proper or holy use of indignation. Cassian will admit this, as we'll see, but Cassian's conviction is that the only proper use of anger is against anger itself, that is to say, directed inwardly against that which has the potential for separating one from, and this is the key to his understanding of anger, separating one especially from one's relationship with one's brothers and sisters in community. Cassian is writing as a monastic superior, or at least as one who is regarded as an abba for particular communities, the communities on the islands of the Loran, in near Marseille, in France, for whom he is writing in the early 5th century, a very different context than Evagrius, who in many ways is attempting to describe as many different aspects or forms of this experience as possible, writing for a very broad spectrum of people, even for lay people who are coming to visit him and seeking out his advice. Cassian is writing from the perspective of someone who seems to be particularly concerned about the destructive effects of anger in community. And as we'll see when we very briefly and even superficially look at Conference 16, the Conference on Friendship, part of the background to Cassian's understanding of, or one might even in a sort of a modern pop psychological way say, his issues with the question of anger, have to do evidently with the fact of its capacity to destroy friendship. One has a very clear sense or a very deep suspicion that this has been something Cassian himself has witnessed, maybe even something he himself experienced. The issue of friendship is essential for Cassian. His whole monastic journey throughout Palestine and Egypt is spent in the company of his very good friend Germanus. They're constantly together. Their friendship is commented on by the abbas whom they see. And for some reason or somehow, Germanus disappears from the scene after Cassian's wandering through Constantinople and his spending time in Rome. We never hear of Germanus again. We don't know what happened to their friendship. Cassian doesn't tell us. We might speculate on what's happened here. Has there been a parting of the ways or a sundering of this experience? Or has Germanus died? And in some sense, Cassian is lamenting, or maybe even in later life, mourning the loss of this very important friendship. It's tempting to speculate, although there isn't enough information to speculate effectively on it. But I think we can say, both from this Institutes Book 8 and also from Conference 16, we can say rather definitively that for Cassian, the question of anger is primarily, primordially, the question of the potential to destroy friendship, to set asunder that which is most central and most important. A friendship can and should be an entire subject of our study, and although we probably won't have time to look at it in detail in this form of the course, I will make available some material on friendship that will help focus our energies primarily on that question in the very latter portion of the course. We'll only be able to look at that issue very generally right now. Let's turn to Book 8 of the Institutes and just highlight a couple of elements here in the text. I've divided it up into several different sections, each of them highlighted by a blue bar. And in the first one, I've noted that the beginnings of this book on anger, on ire or ira, is the question of the damage that is done. And notice the conviction, and you'll find this over and over again, rather than emphasizing, as Evagrius does, that the struggle with this passion, with this logismos, will last throughout life, Cassian wants it to be rooted out. He has the sense that every time it occurs, you have to set it aside, you have to deal with it, and he seems to be primarily concerned with the fact that it must not be allowed to create destructive effects in community. The damage done by anger, he says in number one, is that we cannot rightly judge or acquire the gifts of discretion. We're not even going to be partakers of life because we won't see the Lord of life. We cannot partake of wisdom, is the third point that he mentions, we won't attain immortal life if we harbor anger or resentment against others. We won't be able to judge clearly. We won't be able to have that esteem or honor, which even people outside the monastery enjoy. We won't be able to counsel others. We won't be free from inner disturbances. And he goes on in number two to say, you may not experience anger by using the pretext of saying, well, God becomes angry, and there is such a thing as divine indignation, therefore human beings can share it. No, Cashin is very concerned in chapters 2 to 5 to say, you may not pretend to imitate the divine indignation. And if we drop down to chapter 3, we see that he wants to emphasize that although you find anger spoken of connected with God in the scriptures, this must be understood symbolically and allegorically. And he gives examples. We speak of the footstool of God, and yet we know God doesn't have feet. We speak of his hands. What do these things mean? We speak of God as being drunken, or even of the limbs, or the ignorance of God, the forgetfulness of God. In chapter 4, he tries to give allegorical explanations of all these things. And this becomes very important in the later Western tradition. The allegorical interpretations that he's borrowing from the earlier both monastic tradition and ultimately allegorical notions that arise or derive from Origen become ways in which biblical exegesis will be done. And feel free to spend a little more time looking at these at your own leisure. We've got to move rather quickly through them. He emphasizes in chapter 5 that calmness or freedom from anger is supposed to be a fundamental characteristic of the person who lives in the monastery. Now, in chapters 6 to 9, which I've highlighted with the blue bar, beginning and marked as the third division in this institute, he says that the proper use of anger is only really against anger itself. He says we have the capacity to be angry, but our anger needs to be directed against, paradoxically, he says in chapter 8, against our own anger. We are to be angry at feeling this desire to separate us from our brothers or sisters. And so instead of anger, he says, we should be, in chapter 8, section 3, we should be like David, who responds with imperturbable gentleness, this virtue of praeutes. Anger should evoke within us an anger at our tendency to separate us ourselves from the brother or sister and invite us to cultivate instead, he would say, a virtue of gentleness. If we want to direct anger against something, we direct it against our own sinfulness. So rather than saying, as Evagrius does, that anger is directed outward against the demons, Cashin emphasizes the possibility of an anger directed against our own sinfulness. We might wonder at the wisdom of this, especially in individuals who have a tendency to misuse their own anger against themselves as one of the forms or one of the beginning stages of depression, but it is what Cashin says. In sections 10 to 14, chapters 10 to 14, this fourth division in this institute, he says that we must never cling to anger. It's something we have to expel whenever it appears. And he gives a long allegorical exegesis of the notion of the sun should not go down on our anger. He's obviously borrowing from a favorite biblical metaphor. And he then says that symbolically, the sun is our noose, our intellect. Our intellect must never be allowed to go to bed, to go to sleep angry. We must always make up with those who are angry with us or with whom we're angry before we turn in at the end of the day. So dropping down then, I'm sorry we have to move so quickly through this very important institute, he emphasizes in chapters 16 through 19 that for the person who is still angry or dealing with anger, and that will include everyone, solitude may be harmful. If you are retiring into the hermitage because you're angry with your sisters or brothers, you will only harm your own soul. solitude is not beneficial for those who are actively angry and who are using solitude as a way of avoiding the necessity of working with and finding a solution and even of making peace with those who trouble them. Solitude will not be of benefit, and in fact, he will say, it can potentially be destructive. This is a very interesting conviction that the great hermits of the Western and Eastern tradition have always emphasized. You must only retire into solitude when you are actively working on and you are aware of the ways in which you can activate your thumos in a positive way. If you're harboring resentment or rancor against others, for heaven's sake, do not leave the cenobium for the hermitage. The effect will only be destructive, according to Cassian and all the great ancient monastic tradition. Then in Numbers 20 to 22, he emphasizes the need to uproot all anger from the soul, and his notion of remedies are really that we should simply remember how destructive anger can be. His goal does not so much emphasize psalmody or the liturgical action as Evagrius did, and we might see in Conference 16 that he's very concerned for people who would say, oh, I'm working on my anger, I'm singing the psalms to myself. Singing a psalm or keeping a silence within the heart may in fact be a pretext, may in fact be a way of avoiding the brother or the sister who's causing the problem. So for Cassian, we really have to deal with anger as soon as it arises, and for him, it's something that has to be expelled instantly, immediately, when we perceive it.